Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, we have scheduled tonight one of our favorite guests, one of the guys that we more or less pencil in as soon as we see the schedule released. Mark Innes will be joining us. To that end, we'll go ahead and bring on Mark here shortly, but wanted to go ahead and basically give people an idea as to what we'll do. We'll be talking to Mark. We'll then go into some of the smaller individual areas where Bud and I will pay particular attention to as to whether or not Florida State, or maybe perhaps be a key indicator as to whether or not Florida State will win on Saturday. And then we'll go ahead and give our predictions. But before we bring Mark on, do want to give thanks to Louisiana Hot Sauce, as they are the entity that makes all of this possible. Again, incredibly lucky to be able to pair with them. We're going to start doing some a little bit more with them as far as our own particular favorite ways of using the product and be a little bit more interactive with that. But just want to remind you that they are the people that make this possible. And we would ask that you, as a listenership, really continue to engage with us and them on social media. Your feedback has been phenomenal and has been incredibly appreciated. So thank you very much from us. And thank you to Louisiana Hot Sauce for what they do to make this possible.
We're now joined by Mark Innes on the Louisiana Hot Sauce line. Mark runs Card Chronicle along with Mike Rutherford, and he also is a fine host on ESPN 680 and 93.9 The Ville there in Louisville. Mark, glad to have you back.
I look forward to doing this every year, but I think this is the third year we've done this with Louisville in the ACC, and it's been fun every time.
It's a blast, man. And, you know, you have a great product, and we're not always big on guests because some guests you don't know what you're going to get. But Ingram, I know I speak for you as well. Mark's awesome, and this is going to be a great conversation tonight. So Louisville, number 10 in the country. I guess I'll just start right off the bat. Legit? Top 10 level team?
I think it's possible. I mean, I think if anybody wants to be skeptical because of who they've played, like, I get that. I think Charlotte and Syracuse are not good. I understand that. So anybody is entitled to, I think, a little bit of skepticism. But what I've told people is if a top 10 team played Charlotte and Syracuse on the road, what would you expect them to do? Score 70 and 62 points? I mean, I think that's what a top 10-ish kind of team would do. When they haven't had the scrubs in, or when they haven't just sort of been checked out because they were already up by 28, they've been pretty dominant. And I think a lot of the expectations, I think a lot of the positive thinking about them, and the quick kind of rise up the ranks really goes all the way back to the bowl game against Texas A&M, because that was pretty good defense last year. And Lamar Jackson just kind of did whatever he wanted in that game. And I think that really is where the snowball for, hey, Louisville might be a top 25 team. They might be top 15. They might be kind of top 10-ish. And then the first two games, people are like, yeah, that's a good team.
Mark, as a junior, Lamar Jackson was like a 43% passer back in high school. And then he improved to like 50, I think 54 or something like that. But was a guy who, tremendous athlete, and a good enough athlete to legitimately play receiver or DB at really any school in the country. Big arm, but kind of erratic. And did you see this coming? Did anybody at Louisville see him being this good this quickly?
No, I'll tell you guys a really, really good story. In the recruiting process, you know, Lamar Thomas, who's now at Kentucky, hope you're having fun, Lamar. Lamar Thomas really begged Petrino to offer him, and Louisville didn't. And he ended up taking and saying, let's make a new highlight video of just Lamar throwing the ball, and then maybe Bobby will offer him. And then when Bobby just saw him throwing the ball, he's like, hey, we can do something with this. So I can remember being at the first two public practices and being like, whoa, that guy can really throw the ball. Because Louisville had kind of a sketchy group of quarterbacks post-Teddy. And it was like, wow, that guy can really, really hum the ball. But he clearly has no idea what he's doing whatsoever. And I thought if they redshirt him this year, next year he'll be crazy, crazy good. But instead they just threw him to the wolves. And if you watched him last year, he clearly has no idea what he's doing. One read and run. But even that turned out to be pretty good. I didn't think he would be this good. But I think, you know, to his credit, he really took the mental side really, really seriously in the offseason, and they've worked like crazy with him. He's just a completely different player.
I'm just shocked from having seen him. I know that one SEC school said no to him. Not Florida, obviously. Florida was chasing him, but a school that runs a spread option in the SEC West that he really was interested in. We're not going to name, but maybe they could use a quarterback currently. he would have been a perfect fit for them. And my thought was, okay, he needs to go somewhere where they're going to give him time to develop, not a school that is just so elite quarterback recruiting wise that they're just going to instantly recruit over him, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just shocked how good of a passer he has been. The job that Petrino and I guess Petrino and his son, is that who deserves credit for this? Those two?
And last year, Garrick McGee, before he left, you know, to go to Illinois.
Oh, the UAB guy.
Yeah. Those two last year, I tell you what, where Lamar made the real jump, and I think it's where he made himself a believer that he could do the mental side. They put him in the second half against Kentucky, and they basically just ran Kentucky off the field after falling behind 21-0. But between the last regular season game and the bowl game against A&M, he basically went to the coaches and was like, I can't be just like a runner. I know I can't. I got to do the mental side of this. Help me. Like, really, really buckle down to now in the ball game, and I'll show you what I got. And, like, he was very different in the ball game. And he was, you know, making the line calls, and they were audibling, and he got under center and did a lot of different stuff in the ball game. And from then on, from the regular season ending last year through the offseason, he really devoted himself to the mental side, and it has made all the difference. He just has a huge arm. The big thing is, like, where to go with it. And I think his mechanics were crappy because he didn't know where he was going to go with the ball a lot of times. And now this year he's throwing with a lot of confidence. I think he understands this, you know, last year in the Florida State game last year, he never saw a blitzing corner from his front side. And that sort of stuff just doesn't happen now. I think the advancing on the mental side is just making a huge difference for him in a lot of different ways.
You watched the bowl game, and I think that's, I mean, certainly as far as the caliber of defense faced, how much do you think Texas A&M was in that game? I mean, obviously the offense had checked out. They both their five-star quarterbacks had transferred. Was their defense still in it? You saw it more up close and personal than I did. What did you think? Because, like, I was like, okay, some of these guys are playing hard. Some of these I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I thought the defense was pretty fired up, and I thought they kind of quit after the first two drives, because Louisville scored in the first two drives, and they were just like, I screw this. I'm not chasing this guy around for 60 minutes. But I thought their offense was basically had quit until the fourth quarter. So it was kind of a reversal of the two of them. But I thought they were pretty active up front, Daylon Mack and those guys. I thought the secondary was like, screw this. I'm not chasing guys around all day long. They really looked pretty disinterested. I'm not going to lie to you about that.
Mark, where do you think this team, other than Lamar, because he's obviously was already very talented last year, but he's taken a big step. Where do you think this team is the most improved from last year?
I think wide receiver is a lot better than it was a year ago. You think about the Auburn game for the opener last year, and I'm really the first six games of last season, which includes Florida State. You know, going into the season, they thought Jaquay Savage, who had transferred from A&M, and Jamar Staples and James Quick were going to be the three main guys. And right before the Auburn game, Jamar Staples badly, badly injured his knee. He didn't start to play until like the fourth game of the year. James Quick rolled his ankle in the Auburn game, didn't play for the next three games, didn't play against Houston, didn't play against Clemson. And they ended up playing all these freshman wide receivers. And Devontae Pete was out there, and Jalen Smith, and Imani Spence, and, you know, all these different guys that really shouldn't have been playing as true freshmen against good teams on the schedule. And now they're all healthy. And I think the wide receiver position is a lot more dangerous. They're bigger. They're better blockers for a lot of this edge run game stuff. So I think they are a lot better. And it goes kind of without saying, the offensive line is way better. Last year they had two true freshmen and a redshirt freshman playing up front. And none of them were used to playing with a guy like Lamar Jackson. So it was a real disaster at times last year. So I think both of those spots on offense are really markedly better than a year ago.
Real small sample size, Mark, but do you make anything of what 10 or 11 drops so far this year by the wide receivers?
Yeah, most of them were in Syracuse, too. That's the weird thing. I thought we had, you know, Adam Frohman, who played for U of L for a couple of years under Cragthorpe and Charlie Strong's first year. He thinks really that it's the carrier dome. Like, there really weren't drops in the opener against Charlotte. He said the carrier dome is weird because it's old. and the angles are old and they're really made for basketball. And it just is like an odd place where the lights are and you're just not used to it. And it's kind of quiet and there's really not a lot of people there if you're killing them. He said he thought that it would just be the Carrier Dome. There were no drops against Charlotte in the opener, but it was very weird because it was everybody. It was Cole Hikutini, the tight end who never dropped stuff. It was running backs. It was everybody. And they left 150 yards on the field in drops in that game, in a game where they had 850 yards.
God, I mean, if they catch those balls, it's 1,000 yards.
Yeah, they had almost 1,000 yards. They could have had about 1,000 yards if they caught some of them. I mean, because one, the Brandon Radcliffe drop was a 60-yard touchdown where he was wide open and he dropped it.
It's actually where I was going with that. Everybody wants to talk about Jackson and his talents and what you first think of this offense, but give the Florida State listenership a little bit of an idea of what type of back Radcliffe is.
I think he's really a really, really nice complement to what Lamar Jackson can do. And he is he's very small, but he is extremely strong. He's not a burner by any means. He's not going to rip off a bunch of long runs, but he's very strong. And he's just kind of a battering ram inside guy that is a nice offset to Lamar. And I think that him being a pretty consistent run. I mean, no one even talked about him after the Syracuse game. He had 156 yards. Like he played really well in that game. He's an all right receiver, but he's really very physical. 2 years ago, he was over 100 yards up at Syracuse, and they rode him. They gave him the ball 30 something times. He's a really nice, and all the backs are kind of in his mold. All the running backs are 6 foot and below, 215 or more pounds, kind of bowling ball pounders. They don't have a burner at all. At running back, but that's what Lamar Jackson is. He's the burner in the running game, and these guys punish teams that kind of over pursue, and they do a lot of the inverted veer stuff. And Syracuse kind of bailed out for Lamar Jackson in the second half, and Brandon Radcliffe, I swear he didn't get tackled in the second half. He just sort of ran around anywhere he wanted to because they bailed out, and that was something they really couldn't and didn't do very well last year, was have somebody other than Lamar Jackson run the ball. And I think that's kind of been a nice development with the offense.
Mark, how about the defense? I mean, last year, Florida State went, you know, Everett Golson probably had his best game for Florida State with 372 yards. And it seemed like Jimbo was just in a pretty good play calling rhythm, and Dalvin, you know, broke a bunch of tackles from a defense that kind of looked like at times they were lacking effort, you know, in the second half of that game. How does this year's defense compare to last year's?
Yeah, I don't think you're giving them enough. It didn't look like they weren't giving good effort. They weren't giving good effort. And that was really the theme of the entire second half of the season. Is you had the two main guys, you had Devontae Fields and Josh Harvey Clemens. Both of those guys got railed after the game. I mean, Petrino was very unhappy with both of them. And they admitted it. They basically were like, look, Louisville was 2-4 to start the year. You know, and they got frustrated in the second half of that game because Louisville couldn't get much going offensively in the second half, and they just kind of checked out. And Florida State, you can't do that because they did what they did last year. So I think there's a lot better. And I think the good news is they're oddly have managed to be deeper up front in particular than they have been in the previous 2 years. And I think that probably will bode well for them. Maybe not so much in this game because, you know, Florida State doesn't do the tempo crap like Syracuse did, but for the rest of the season.
Do you think if you were attacking this defense, would you want them to be in their base 3-4 or do you want to get them in nickel? And if so, who is the guy that comes off the field and who comes on the field when they go to 5 DBs?
Yeah, I would want to be in nickel, and I would want to make Louisville's corners beat blocks within the screen game and make tackles on the edges. And if you remember that game up here 2 years ago in the second half, Florida State did kind of go a little bit up tempo and was firing the ball out on these wide receiver screens and keeping the ball on the edges because Louisville's corners are fairly small. Shaq Wiggins is small. Tremaine Washington is small. Jair Alexander and Ron Walker are not, but they're not nearly as good cover guys. So I would want to be a nickel, and I would want to make those little guys tackle on the edge because I think that's really where they are the weakest. And Louisville basically takes a defensive tackle-sized guy off the field, moves an outside linebacker-ish guy to end, and then brings a nickel back on. And they've been experimenting with Josh Harvey Clemens basically being a middle linebacker because he's, you know, 6'5", 230-ish. Against Syracuse, they basically took all the linebackers off the field, and he was the middle linebacker. And they brought another safety on, who then got himself thrown out of the game for targeting. But it's been a mix-and-match and kind of experimental thing up front, but because I think they have better depth this year than they did a year ago.
When Kelsey and Thomas are on the field, I assume Keith is much better in pass coverage than Thomas is?
No, I think it's the other way. I think.
Oh, really?
Stacey,
okay.
Yeah, I think Stacey Thomas, if you remember 2 years ago up here, James Burgess was killing James Winston because of how well he did on the tight end, on O'Leary in particular. Stacey Thomas is in that mold, and I think that Keith Kelsey is much better in the box against the run, taking on blocks, you know, that sort of thing. But Stacey Thomas, he can really run. He's very similar to James Burgess in that regard. And so I don't think Florida State uses the tight end quite like they did with O'Leary a couple of years ago. But he's more in that mold where he's a very good cover guy. But Keith Kelsey is the guy that's pretty stout against the run.
Interesting. I know just from the South Florida perspective, Stacey was seen as a guy like, you know, is he agile enough to play a linebacker? He's probably not. Like, I know he used to be listed like 6'3" and a half, and people were like, oh, he's a defensive end. I thought, I don't know. I've seen this kid in person. I'm pretty sure he's not 6'3" and a half. He's more of a linebacker type. That's interesting that they're actually playing him on the inside.
Yeah, they've got him at middle linebacker next to Kelsey, and he's really has been a pleasant. I'm with you. I thought maybe he'd be an outside linebacker, like a 3-4 outside linebacker, but he's playing inside, and he runs really well. You know, for how they use them.
The name of this game, I think, is going to be Don't Get Killed on Play Action, right? Exactly. Since both these teams are – I was looking at some of Louisville's first down numbers, and I don't have their specific play action numbers. I assume just from – I've watched their stuff. I didn't always pay attention to what down it was. That's got to be one of the best play action teams in the country.
Well, I mean, the first play from scrimmage against Syracuse was a 72-yard play action touchdown pass. So, yeah, they've been – they ate Syracuse up on play action. And I'll tell you, it was a theme in the off season that because Lamar couldn't do anything last year and just had to sort of survive in the shotgun, play action was really kind of taken out of the offense. And if you know anything about Petrino, like, that just kills him to not be able to do play action, to not be able to do boots, you know, all the stuff that keeps an offense honest against the run. And a lot of that was just gone, and they just kind of had to just ride Lamar. Well, now he's a lot more comfortable under center, and in the pistol, and the bootleg stuff has been much more effective, and the play action stuff has been much more effective. And I'm with you. I think Florida State does the same thing, both of those things, really well, and put a lot of strain on a defense sort of side to side and then over the top. And they've both gotten each other a couple times. You remember the first play from scrimmage 2 years ago? Devontae Parker
was yes.
A huge pass. They ended up not scoring, but it was a huge throw. Bobby loves that sort of thing, and Jimbo does too.
And I don't think there's a better coach in the country at getting what I would call free runners in the secondary, just guys who are just wide open or very open with you know, a trail defender not really in a good position to make a play, especially with the deep post stuff. I don't fully understand how he does it, but I know that just from talking to other high school coaches who really study that stuff, a ton of respect in the industry. And I think Brohm does a lot of the same stuff now at Western Kentucky.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think Chris Brown, you know, Smart Football, said he thinks what makes Bobby unique, and good, you know, lots of good offensive minds are unique, kind of in their own way. But Bobby seems to be able to figure out what defense's keys are. Like, he watches them and he figures out where it's their decision making, and then he just puts stress on them with route combinations. And I think that's really pretty unique. There aren't a lot of guys that do that. But you're right. You know, when things are just base normal, he's really good. And you'd be like, holy shit, how is that guy so wide open?
Yeah, it's a little bit concerning.
it has been an issue, I know.
yeah. Florida State leads the nation now in 20-plus yard passes allowed.
Yep.
And Louisville leads the nation in 20-yard passes. So.
Right. Yeah, that and seems like a weakness on a strength.
70-yard passes or 70-yard plays as well. Those are good plays when you can get them, those 70-yarders.
But a lot of teams don't have more than like one or two of those in the whole year.
Yeah.
Mark, to take it away from the field for a little bit, I've read a couple different places where people think this is one of the bigger games in at least recent history for Louisville. Is there any kind of bemoaning, I guess, in the fan base? I don't know if that's the right word, but a little bit of regret that it's a noon kickoff?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I think, but it's actually an improvement because it's not a Thursday game.
I don't know.
Yeah, virtually every big game in Louisville's history has been a Thursday or a Friday game because that's what Louisville's had to do. I mean, I try to explain to people, like, Louisville's only been trying to be good in football since, like, 85. Before that, they were playing in a minor league baseball stadium, and there was debate about getting rid of football. And then they hired Howard Schnellenberger, like, no, we're going to do this right. And, pretty good under Howard. They built their own stadium, and then they've really made a real effort. But there's just not a lot of, like, grand history, and there hasn't really been a lot of reason for any of the networks to put them on TV in any of these really major slots before. So for it to finally be on a Saturday is pretty exciting. For game day to be here, pretty exciting. Do people wish it was an 8 o'clock game? Absolutely.
You call it one of the more important games in program history?
I think it's one of the top two or three. I think when they played West Virginia here in 06, both teams were in the top six, I think. Mm-hmm. Thursday night game, the winner was going to have the Big East, by the nuts there. And then that game was so cool because it was a blackout and then like half the stadium lights went out. Like it was a wild kind of game. But I think this one is right up there with that one in terms of importance. And I think the cool thing is it's not huge because they're playing somebody good. Like they're good too. And there just haven't been a ton of those.
How weird is it, or just kind of cool actually, that we can say the loser of this game is not out of the playoff race? Louisville, Florida State, the loser is not going to be totally out of the playoff race.
Yeah, and along the same lines of what I was just saying, like the history is different. Like Louisville's wanted, like I think it goes back to having some basketball championships already. Like Louisville's always wanted to be like, well, let's just be really good in football too, because we were in basketball by ourselves. But the standard has been basically like you have to be like 12-0. Or 11-1, or you literally don't matter. Like, and so to the idea of like having a schedule where maybe you could absorb a loss and people aren't just like, well, forget about them, it is weird, and it's very, very different for where Louisville's been as a program. I can still remember when Louisville played Central Florida and lost that game. I can remember CBS kind of breaking it down, the CBS studio guys on a Wednesday. And Randy Cross saying, like, I think Central Florida is going to beat Louisville. They're going to upset them, and then we won't have to talk about them anymore. I can remember him saying that. And I think that's how Louisville's been treated for, like, decades. Either they go undefeated or we don't have to talk about them. And so for it to be like, yeah, they would still have Clemson. They'll still have the rival game with Kentucky. They still have Houston. They could still go to a huge bowl game. They could still be, kind of outside playoff team or something like that. It's very, very, very different from how Louisville football has really been ever in its history.
It's funny you say that because I was just about to say, regardless of the win of this game, can you please beat Houston so we don't have to talk? They have militant fans on Twitter. It's ridiculous.
I just realized we're commiserating on having lost to Houston in Louisville's game. Lamar Jackson, his second start, and first home game, and they took advantage of him because they just sort of hemmed him in, and he just chucked the deep over and over again and got intercepted, and they still almost won. Louisville still came back and almost won that game. I think a lot of the Louisville guys just really, really want a piece of Houston. I think they feel pretty badly about how that game went last year. I'm sure Florida State would probably feel the same way.
Yeah, I think for sure, and that was an interesting ball game. I still think if they have Golson in that game, that they have a real shot to win, because when they had to put Costantino in, that was just an unmitigated disaster. And then they had to put McGuire back in on a busted ankle, and he couldn't really get enough on the throws to beat him deep. Mark, switching gears real quick, who's somebody on this team who, aside from Lamar Jackson and Radcliffe and Fields, who's somebody that Florida State fans should know is has a real chance to be a difference maker?
I think James Hearns, playing outside linebacker opposite Devontae Fields, he really benefits, I think, from all of the attention that Devontae Fields requires as a pass rusher. And I think Hearns, he's got his body. He's in tremendous shape now. And him being a 3-4 outside linebacker, he's at 6'4", and he's about 260. And just a ferocious pass rusher. And again, he really benefits from everybody having to pay such attention to Fields. I think he's He's looked really good these first 2 weeks of the season. He ate Syracuse and Charlotte up because he almost never gets the double team. And I think if you guys remember in the opener, I thought Florida State's tackles in the first half, at least, like it's pretty rough against Ole Miss. And you'd like to think that Hearns and Field look at that and say, hey, maybe we can do something like that. So I think everybody knows Devontae Fields, but I think James Hearns is the guy that has a chance to have a real impact on the game.
Tallahassee kid, by the way.
Yes, yes. One of those ones that Charlie magically got through to qualify somehow.
That's
the tackle frustration didn't necessarily completely end with the Ole Miss game either. So, yeah, that may be a very legitimate observation.
At least the right tackle. The left guard did stop tripping the left tackle against Charleston Southern, which was an improvement. Easier to block if you're on 2 feet than one, for sure. What about this Louisville team makes you nervous?
Well, I mean, they haven't played anybody really good yet. So I think that they haven't really been – I mean, in both games after six possessions, so three in the first game, three, they were up, 21-0 in both games. So they haven't had to grind yet really at all. And I think that they haven't played anybody that will line up and really push them yet. Syracuse is that gimmicky Baylor garbage, and Charlotte is its own version of a spread, really hurry up team. But they're terrible. They're fourth year as a program.
Is that the worst team in D1? You think
they're up there? Although they did pound Elon last week, let's give them that. Yeah, they're pretty bad though, and they're real bad. I tell you what, the funniest thing to me, this is how you know you're bad. Even like your gimmicky stuff is real bad. Like they lined up in the Emory and Henry, and for folks who don't know, that's where you just have the center and the two guards, and then both tackles go way wide and line up with a wide receiver, and you just basically try to create like a place for screens. And like Louisville just kind of rushed five guys at him over three, and Kevin Olsen just freaked out and like threw it backwards a good 10, 12 yards, and it bounced out of bounds. It was terrible. They're real, real bad. But, I mean, I just think they haven't played anybody that'll get under center and maybe force them to be physical and run the ball and be patient. I think Florida State obviously is quite good at that. So that's what makes me nervous.
The patient thing there was kind of what I had noticed. I mean, Louisville has just had so many successful big plays. We really haven't seen anybody so far this year, or even necessarily going back to the bowl game, make Lamar Jackson be patient and check the ball down and be okay, hitting a 10-yard stick route. You know what I mean? I given that Derwin James is out and you really can't replace him and he's a super freak, my guess, and the replacement looks to be a, kind of a more veteran, knows the defense type, all those cliches, not as athletic type player. My guess is they're going to make Louisville dare them to be patient and try to win in the red zone, with length and strength, basically like they do to a lot of teams.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Lamar Jackson is going to be accurate enough and patient enough to make them get out of that?
I think he can be, and I think that they're going to have to scheme for some of that as well. But I haven't seen him do it, so I'd be lying to you if I was like, yeah, he can do that. I know he can. Because I haven't seen that.
That's the way you'd play it, right? I'm guessing.
I would. I mean, I think Florida State is in position to where they can get pressure with Forish and play zone and have their guys facing forward, and not let him just run around. I thought both Syracuse and Charlotte basically were like, well, we can't win either way, so we're just going to recklessly like just come at you. And there was like, that's dumb.
Syracuse has done this for several years. They did it with Schaefer. They would aggressively blitz Florida State and play man coverage with some corners that just had no business doing it. I was like, man, what are you doing? Like, at least,
Charlotte made sense because they don't have anybody.
Right. But if you're Syracuse, stay back a little bit.
They didn't. They really didn't. Like, it was bad.
Yeah, I think that Florida State's going to try to play as much kind of softer zone as possible and see if Louisville can consistently execute as opposed to giving the big play, which is obviously something Louisville's just been so good at and Florida State's just been so susceptible to. The other thing I think that's going to be a real key here, Florida State's defensive ends have been really good against the run this year, both Josh Sweat and DeMarcus Walker. Mm-hmm. And one thing I noticed about Louisville is they were able to just absolutely cave in Syracuse's defensive ends, you know, and hit that corner on a real sort of curved basis as opposed to having to go real wide before cutting up the field.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I haven't seen it yet, if Louisville's going to be able to block those guys and get movement on them, or if they're going to be able to force Louisville to go real wide, which gives, you know, Florida State speed the ability to run over the top and kind of gives them an extra step or two. Because Louisville's having to go a little bit wider.
No, I wouldn't be shocked at all if Louisville really just tried to read those ends instead of trying to block them really at all. Because, I mean, they're so much different than anybody for Syracuse or for Charlotte. But I thought, you know, last year, Miles Garrett, like, they handled him just fine. Yeah, for Texas A&M in the bowl game. Like, they had no problem with him. I think he had a sack on the first drive, and he did nothing the rest of the game. I thought they handled him, and he's a pretty good pass rusher too.
Yeah, he's a beast.
But Louisville's really, I think that Louisville's offense, you know, last year they gave up a ton of pressure through guard center guard, a lot. And if that's better, if those guys can hold up, and I think they're better at guard and center than they were a year ago, if that can hold up a little more, they've got a chance to maybe just try to read those ends instead of blocking them nearly as much. And they've got to win kind of another way. And then I think that Lamar's got to drop back to pass and then just kind of do some crazy stuff. Like, that's in his game. Like, you got to have some of that. And they're not going to win if they don't get some of that.
Man, that's who he is. And I feel like it simplifies some coverages for him, too, because you there's just certain defenses you don't want to play against a guy that has – I know some people said he had Michael Vick-like ability, and I don't know if I agree quite with that, but I think it's not unfair to say – that he's like the closest thing running wise since Michael Vick among guys who can actually throw. Now, granted, there's been some dudes who can just run around, but Jackson can actually throw the ball.
Yeah, I think the thing with he's different than Michael Vick. Like, Michael Vick is really elusive. I think Lamar Jackson is good. He's like a one cut running back, but he gets to full speed fast, like really fast. And that's unique. I think he kind of takes two steps and takes off, and all of a sudden it's like, well, holy crap, he's already at full speed. And then it's on. There's going to have to be three or four third and fives or longer that are pass plays that he makes happen, because Florida State's going to get pressure. They're going to have good coverage because they have good players in the back end. And he's just going to have to make those into first downs and keep drives going. I think that Louisville's not going to win if he doesn't run the ball 10 or 15 times and convert some of those, you know, into first downs.
Would you come after him, or would you try to do more of the, like, compress the pocket, controlled rush, keep the offensive lineman between you and then chase when he tries to, you know, say it like, would you try to squeeze the pocket, or would you, obviously you're going to do both, but or would you really try to go after him and heat it up?
I wouldn't come after him. Not with the Florida State's kind of really fast defensive backs and linebackers, and they've got a really good defensive line that they can probably get a lot of pretty good pressure with four and five. I wouldn't. They don't have to. Yeah, I think the Louisville's got good receivers, and I thought they held up pretty well against Florida State last year down there. I thought James Quick had a great game down there last year. I wouldn't take any chances, especially with Derwin James with Derwin James out and Jalen Ramsey, who just annihilated everybody for Louisville last year. I just wouldn't take chances if I didn't have to, unless Louisville forced you to because they were able to do something else. But if I was them, I'd rely on that front four, which is so good. And see what I can make of it without taking too many chances, especially on the road.
So Florida State's two starting guards have been out the last couple games. And while they returned to practice this week, Florida State's practices is now officially 100% closed. So we don't even get to see stretching anymore. But we do have practice sources. And from what I was told early this week, they actually did not practice like starters. They were not running with the first team. So tell us a little bit about this De'Asian Richardson kid and Drew Bailey Jr. Drew Bailey, the two, granted, Messon bad defensive ends, but it's a 3-4, so they're kind of, you know, the guards are going to be trying to block them a lot.
Yeah, Louisville basically plays with three defensive tackles. You know, D'Angelo Brown is the nose guy, and De'Asian Richardson is, he's De'Asian again. He was De'Asian, and then he was Johnny last year. Now he's De'Asian again. But
I like that he's going back.
Former FSU commit.
That's good. Good flexibility there.
Yeah, he's really big. He tore his ACL early last year and came back, and he is the closest thing they have to replacing Sheldon Rankins, where he's a guy that's big and compact, but still really quick. And the defensive line, this is what I meant when I was saying earlier, that they've got more depth than they had a year ago. They really rode Sheldon Rankins and D'Angelo Brown like all the time last year. And part of the reason they kind of wilted at Florida State last year is those guys just, they just got tired. Well, you know, they've rotated Drew Bailey, who's a really good pass rusher. Chris Williams is the old Ole Miss signee that signed here this year at a junior college. Dejan Richardson, D'Angelo Brown, a lot of different guys playing up front, and they're all pretty big, and they really keep people off of Keith Kelce and Devontae Fields and James Hearns a lot. So a lot of mix-and-match guys, and thank God Florida State doesn't do the Baylor trash. So there'll be some substitutions and some kind of matchup chess in this game that should be kind of fun to watch.
Oh, FSU is doing pop passes now, Mark.
Oh, yay.
Jimbo hit Hugh Freeze with a pop pass, which I thought was some poetic justice there for all the bullshit Ole Miss pulls.
Well, I got a big kick out of Louisville playing at Syracuse last Friday. They had like 15 cramps.
Yes, I noticed that. You guys have got to get some pickle juice.
Yeah, big time conditioning issues up there. And I thought my favorite thing was a Syracuse guy like, how come none of our guys are getting cramps? So because Louisville doesn't run your stupid Baylor, you know, gimmicky garbage. So.
Yeah, I really don't think that's the goal of football is to like, I don't know.
They ran 91 plays and barely had 400 yards of offense, so that's fine.
Ole Miss allowed Jimbo Fisher to set a record for the number of plays that he has ever run at Florida State.
I was amazed by that because so much of it was in the second half too. But you know what? Ole Miss decided, let's just keep going fast. And then in the second half, we'll also stop trying to run the ball.
And if you watch it, like they run so much RPO that you can kind of scheme them out of the handoff, right? So Florida State would align basically to take away the handoff and to where it looked like they were outnumbered. And then they would bail at the snap. But Kelly had already made up his mind that he wouldn't hand the ball off because there was too many guys in the box. So they were kind of gaming Ole Miss. Like Ole Miss said that we called in their press conference, they said they called 31 runs, okay, to run like potential running backs. But their backs only got, I think, 10 or 11 carries. So I think there is something to be said for actually calling a real handoff just to keep the defense honest. Because Florida State just put DeMarcus Walker at D tackle, and he whipped that fat-ass guard over and over again.
Might be even something more to it when you have a defensive end lining up over your guard with no run responsibility or concerns
just
whatsoever.
Just pass rushed every play.
Yeah, I mean, that I've totally, you know, Charlie was never into the spread stuff, and Petrino's not into, like, the super no-huddle stuff. Like, I'm totally in the minority here, but I think I'm among friends. Like, eventually, you have to move people, and you have to impose yourself somewhere. And you can't just run around people and run around blocks and just rely on going fast.
Because somebody's going to get you in the red zone.
Exactly. Well,
and there's less space.
Yeah, totally. And, I mean, ultimately, Florida State's got guys that are athletic enough. They've got them some that can do both, right? They've got some athletes that can defend either kind of style. And you can't – there are certain athletes you can't go fast enough to just go around them. And I was pleased. And it seems to be kind of be this way, right? Like in the majority of times where like a really elite kind of normal team and a really elite one of these teams. I mean, hell, even that really good Baylor team a couple years ago blew that big lead to Michigan State, got beat by UCF in the Fiesta Bowl. Like it happens. There's a reason. There's a pattern.
Right. And if you're going to go spread and tempo, you need to I think your primary focus has got to be on running the football like, you know, like Urban does.
Yes, you know, I totally agree.
Or Gus Malzahn. Spread option. Yeah, spread option is different than this Baylor stuff. Yeah, I
know. I'm with you completely. It only works if they intend to win 70 to 59 or something.
How fast is Louisville going to go? Like, they're not, like, super tempo.
No, you know, I think they've got a good tempo, but they don't always really huddle. But I think what you'll see is if Bobby knows that he's got a really bad personnel matchup on the field, like bad for the defense, bad for Florida State, they won't huddle and they'll kind of pick the pace up and make you keep those guys on the field. And they did that a couple of times against Kentucky where they ended up with kind of a nickel package on the field and they would just run and run and hurry. So that way. So I think sometimes they'll use personnel to manipulate who comes on the field. and then keep them on the field with pace, but it's not at, by any means a hurry-up offense or something that they intend to do on a regular basis. It's really more of a, can I maintain a mismatch with it than anything else?
Florida State fans, at least from the feedback we get, are under this impression that FSU is the only team in the country that, that struggles to defend tempo. So they're going, which is of course not true. They actually held Ole Miss to, I think, the third lowest yards per play in the last like 12 or 15 games against D1 opponents. But they'll be happy to know that Louisville's not a crazy tempo team.
I think Louisville fans after Syracuse feel the same way. They're like, geez, just give me a regular team.
It's hard to defend. Like, I think you have to be able to run multiple speeds. If the only thing you have is a fastball, the only thing you have is a changeup, it's not great. But, you know, it's nice to, it's a nice tool to have. I don't know if you need to go that fast all the time.
I thought Gary Danielson, for as much as a guy who kind of just like Neanderthalically, you know, picks on spread and no huddle stuff, I thought in the Kentucky-Florida game when he was kind of talking about pace and that sort of thing, I thought he was fair in saying it's, if you are going to do that, it needs to be a part, but it can't be like your bread and butter. Like if you just rely on getting ahead because you go fast, you, somebody's going to catch up to you.
Exactly.
Well, there's always, not to be like a, you know, caveman football, but it's, there's always going to be an aspect of football about controlling the line of scrimmage.
Yes, and, totally.
That when you cannot do that, and when you're completely built around tempo and the situations that you can force people into tempo, you're it catches up to you. Absolutely. And you talked about it in some of years past with some of these better teams that have run up against tempo teams in bowl games.
And can you run an effective defense? Like, I really want to ask Gary Patterson, he would never say it publicly, how much do you hate having to try to install that defense? Not even in a game, I get it, but like in practice, if you face that kind of offense with that insane pace, it's got to impact your ability to teach defense, right? Like, because the offense is just going so fast, and it becomes a culture. I don't know, man. I feel like a lot of these teams that defend that, like I think Houston does it right. If you're going to run that crazy pace, you need to be incredibly aggressive on defense and basically just sell out for either turnovers, tackles for loss, or just give up the bomb, whatever. Like, because the three outcomes are really bad for the offense or your own offense is getting the ball back. Like, right. I think these teams that try to play bend but don't break on defense while their offense is going 110 miles an hour are idiots. So that's the best way to get your defense tired out. I would just, if I was going to play that style, I would be hyper aggressive on both sides of the ball so my defense stays fresh later on in the game.
That's, you can't go so tempo and then have a defense that's designed around absorbing snaps.
Right, exactly.
That's interesting that you mentioned like what's practice like, because like Louisville preparing for Syracuse, you know, Babers is like a Bryles guy. Like he's, and you guys will see that when you play them. But, like, they had two offenses going in practice. Like, the offense one would run a play, and, like, the other one would just run on the field and run a play. Like, that's how they practice. Like, that's not preparing. That doesn't help you prepare for anybody else but Syracuse.
Yeah, that exactly. They
This is the complete opposite. I've often wondered how much defense you can really install and learn when you're playing at Georgia Tech right now. It's just, I think you're so dictated by the offense that you see all the time that that it's a pretty significant handicap that you're putting on yourself.
Oh, this is no, this not, like, I know they beat you guys last year and all that, but like there, I can't tell you how many times when I'm thinking about teams in the ACC that I forget that Georgia Tech is in the ACC because of how different they are. For that very reason, like I forget that they don't do anything cool and they run that. Like I always forget about them.
I wish we kept that offense in our league, but just didn't have it at a school that actually had legitimately good recruiting potential, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if Duke ran that,
right, oh, exactly.
Awesome, man. That'd be so cool. Or, hell, if Pitt was a damn
Boston College.
Flex Pitt or Boston College.
Boston College, exactly. Yeah. Let's ship him up to Boston College. Adazio can go coach offensive line somewhere again. He was a really good offensive line coach. And
Adazio should run that offense.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
Like, that's him. He hates throwing the ball anyway, clearly.
Yeah, they're actually a little bit improved this year, like, on offense. Not a lot, but some. Like, they scored multiple touchdowns against Georgia Tech. They covered the spread against UMass. They're not – like, last year they were just really, really sad, and I felt bad for them when Florida State broke their quarterback's leg in the second game of the season.
Yeah, Louisville ended up playing against Flutie's nephew.
Oh, God.
in the game here, and then still only won by like a field goal because it was in the pouring rain and they were so rough offensively for a big stretch last year too. But no, I'm with you. I think if Georgia Tech, like if they had, there was I've always heard that like Chad Morris was really intrigued by that job when he was at Clemson. Like if they had somebody cool like that, Georgia is like the fourth biggest producer of players now.
Yeah,
like they could be so cool. But again, just Ingram, when you said that offense, it just made me think like how many times I think about, all right, who's doing what in the ACC now? Like I was thinking about quarterback play. Remember I had a couple tweets about ACC quarterback play is like really good. And then people were like, well, what about Justin Thomas? He was the Orange Bowl MVP. I was like, whatever. Like he's a running back. Like stop it. You know, I didn't even think about them, and he's not really a quarterback. So.
Like David Ortiz steals bases at a great clip, right? But he doesn't do very – yeah, it's not the same shit.
That Orange Bowl feels like it was 6 years ago too. That's but, yeah, he's a hell of a player. Imagine put a hell of an exhibition on Mississippi State that night, no doubt.
Tell people that, like, in Mississippi State and Georgia Tech played in the Orange Bowl, like, 2 years ago. It's like, whatever. No,
yeah. Mark, you mentioned rain. For the Boston College game. It looks like there could be some rain for this game on Saturday.
The prognosis has greatly improved over the last day or so. I think we're not going to get rain until after the game. I think we're looking at a pretty comfortable, partly cloudy kickoff, but I think at this point we are not going to get rain. So if any of your listeners have 2002 flashbacks in their heads, I do not think we're going to get the torrential downpour that we got, or that maybe some were expecting a la 2002 this time.
Ooh, okay. I think that's better, too. I mean, like, that's a better showcase for both teams. I don't think anybody wants to go out there and play. Like, I think the rain might actually benefit FSU, but...
I agree.
With Jackson, with how much he relies on running and changing direction. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like...
You're supposed to be a clean game. Jeez.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm with you. I'm with you completely.
All right. Let's flip this. What questions do you have for us about Florida State? I feel like whenever we do this, it's always good because our listeners, this is kind of like replacing the segment where our listeners ask questions.
Yeah. All right. So I think for Louisville fans, the number one thing they want to know is how can I best kill Dalvin Cook before Saturday?
Okay.
Where might I find him right now?
His new roommate is Travis Rudolph. So, if you follow Travis Rudolph home, he'll lead you to Dalvin.
For folks who don't know, I mean, like, it's debatable that Louisville has tackled Dalvin Cook yet in two meetings. I mean, the guy 2 years ago really killed him in the second half, and last year killed him in the second half. And the frustrating thing about that is, you say, how are you going to best defend him? Like, they kept him really bottled up in the first half last year. So you're like, okay, well, if you bottle him up, he still blew up in the second half. Like, oh, we'll just get a big lead. Well, they had a big lead 2 years ago, and he still killed them in the second half in that game. So I don't know what they can do about him other than kill him between that and Saturday. Like, that seems to be the best option.
That's what we've gotten down to, huh?
Basically. So, first of all, is he healthy? And then what do you guys make of the lack of super-duper big runs and stuff that we've sort of become accustomed to seeing from him the first 2 years?
Ingram, do you think he's healthy? Like, I don't know if he's 100%, man. Ingram may differ. He had some runs against Charleston Southern where it started to get back looking to like Dalvin Cook. And we asked Jimbo Fisher about this in the post game, and he said, look, you know, he really didn't take any contact in fall camp, which who knows if Jimbo's telling the truth because we don't get to watch practice. I don't think he took a lot of contact, I would agree. And I know that in many days he's been in a non-contact jersey because they want to preserve him. Mm-hmm. We had the shoulder scope, missed spring. Jimbo says he's 100% and that he hadn't lost any speed. I don't know that he so far has run with the same consistent conviction that he did last year. But I'll also say Ole Miss really loaded up on the run to such an extent to where the freshman quarterback threw for 420 yards. And Dalvin caught, what, 9 balls, Ingram? Something like that?
103 yards receiving?
Yeah, he added 100 yards receiving. And our seats on press row are right in front of the NFL scouts. And I've talked to those guys before, and I've told this story on the podcast before. And I was always like, what do you think? And they're look at you like, what do you think? Of course, he's a stud. But the thing that they had told me prior was they really hadn't seen him catch the ball very well. Well, he actually made a couple of difficult catches in the Ole Miss game and ended up catching 103 yards on – like, I think it was 9 catches, which is really a nice outing. He ran the ball pretty good against Charleston Southern. And I think one of the things we're seeing, Jimbo has talked about in recent days, the need for patience, not with the running backs, but from the running backs, which kind of makes sense because we were doing our film review that we do every week. And on three separate occasions, Dalvin takes and tries to cut a power play at a gun backdoor, right? And so we were thinking, okay, is this intentional? Like, did Florida State see something from Ole Miss that they felt would pop out the backside that didn't? Or is this just a running back being really aggressive and trying to kind of press the issue and trying to force things as opposed to letting the play open up? Well, the Showtime series was actually kind of illuminative here in that it showed multiple times Fisher yelling at Dalvin, wait for it, be patient, right? So we're thinking maybe because Dalvin just so eager to get back in there because after he missed spring and after he's looking to prove something, not that I really don't think he should have anything to prove. I mean, he's really, really damn good and had a great career already.
You don't have to tell us.
Yeah, right. Like, imagine that guy's got something to prove.
Right.
There could be something to the idea that he has not been patient enough yet.
Patience, I'm not sure that he's – I don't know. I mean, you don't want to be wildly speculative, but I am not fully convinced that he's 100% healthy either.
So I agree with that, yeah.
And look, you're going to see whatever Dalvin does have, you're going to see it on Saturday. I mean, there's no there'd be no reason to have the governor on. There's no reason to do anything other than have your best product possible. So he will be back into the flow of football. He'll be back to used to getting hit and everything else as to the reasons as to why we've heard why he might not look quite as – he just doesn't have that that like turbo, that ridiculous explosion. That's the main thing that I've noticed. And he doesn't seem to be running with quite like the ferocity that you'd see from him at times.
There is a name to know though, Mark, Jacquez Patrick, the sophomore who last year had some good things, but it really seems like the staff as a whole has been really reluctant to praise him publicly. And I think it's because they want to get more out of him. He finally seems to be running to his size. I mean, he's like 6'2", 235.
Yeah, he's really big. I can remember him in the Clemson game last year, kind of in some stretches.
Yes, and so he's finally starting to run really well. And their fullback is still out, Freddie Stevenson. He missed the Charleston Southern game, as far as I know. And I don't have today's practice report yet. I've been checking my phone periodically to see if my guy has texted me, because obviously practice is closed. I think that he also has been a really willing blocker this year. They've actually used him in the fullback role some from the shotgun, and I'm interested to see if they continue to do that, because if they do, he also has really good hands, so that gives you the ability to catch the ball with both your backs in the backfield.
I'll go kind of along the same lines, and I guess what's really been the storyline of this week. You know, last year, Jalen Ramsey and Derwin James, like, they were so integral. Like, I felt like they really kind of punished Louisville on the back end. And now neither of those guys are out there when they take the field this year. So describe how Florida State adjusts to him not being out there. And do they still try to have a spy on Lamar Jackson like he was last year? Or do they just try to go kind of structurally, just absorb him not being there?
The problem with trying to replace Derwin is that he's so damn versatile, right? Like, you can go with the same personnel. He can be your best safety. He can play center field. He can, you know, cover a half. He can be your best linebacker, and he can also go down and be one of the best pass rushers in the ACC. Which there's just no way to replace that. I think that what they're going to do replacing him is just to try and keep the back end more secure and have guys back there who can communicate, who know the defense, who are not going to. I think patience with the play-action game is going to be a really key factor for both sides here, but especially for Florida State without James. You're going to have to tell those guys, hey, you got to trust your front six or your front seven, depending on if Louisville's going to, you know, going to line up in three and four wide, or if they're a little more traditional set, depending. But you got to trust, man, that your front can take care of this. Don't trigger to come downhill on the run until you're really sure. And I think that they're going to be a little more cautious in the back end. If they spy, I think it'll be one or two guys. Either Matthew Thomas, who is actually eligible to play football this year. Louisville, I don't think, has seen him except for maybe five or six snaps ever. he was hurt. Inger, wasn't he hurt with the dude who was hurt in the Louisville game 2 years ago up there? And he,
I think he got hurt first quarter of the Louisville game, yeah.
Right, okay, because then at that point, FSU had, like, no more linebackers who were healthy left and had to put in a safety. And luckily for them, Eddie Goldman just took over the game in the middle, and they were able to stop the run that way. But Louisville didn't have a running quarterback back then. So Matthew Thomas, I think, is very capable of spying Lamar if they do decide to go man with the spy. And the other guy who's capable is Trey Marshall, who Louisville did not face last year, if I recall, because he tore his bicep. He's back and is one of their more explosive defenders. He's the guy who starts opposite Derwin. Maybe not always the best guy in coverage, but if they, in certain dime sets, like if Louisville goes four wide, I would expect Florida State to perhaps use Trey Marshall as more of a spy. He won the opening 40-yard competition a couple years ago, if I recall. And is a really great straight line type speed. The ability to chase down a guy in the open field, and you'd have to put like a Westbrook or a Nate Andrews there in the back end in for him. But I think those are your two prime spy candidates. But primarily, I think they would prefer to play zone if possible. That way you get 11 sets of eyes on him.
Mark, I'll just add to that that there's a decent chance, we don't know for sure, that Florida State will get Nate Andrews back, a guy who's talked about being in college football for a while. As a true freshman, I think led the 2013 team in interceptions. I did check that.
Yes, but yeah, he did.
A guy who's been playing for a long time, really heady, can be a very good player when he can play defense with his eyes in the backfield, fairly limited at times in coverage at the same time. So a guy who you would have confidence in getting everybody lined up right, perhaps in reducing some of the blown coverages that Florida State's been pretty kind and pretty quick to show this year, but also limited in his own ways as well.
Well, that's all. I think that's the two things on the Louisville, and people just want to know, like, how bad is it going to be from Dalvin Cook, and how bad will it be for y'all without Derwin James there? So I think that I was thoroughly impressed, but I know that you harp on this in one way or another, but I mean, it's pretty obvious that Jimbo's kind of the quarterback whisperer at this point. You're stringing together too many good quarterbacks in a row. So I don't doubt that that's going to be a strength. And I think I'm going to harp on this really all year, that there's the ACC's quarterbacks, the top three in this league are better than anybody else's quarterbacks, like, period. Like this, and then you get into guys that I thought, the guy from Virginia Tech looked pretty good against Tennessee. Trubisky at North Carolina is pretty good. Obviously, Brad Kai is pretty good. I mean, there's a bunch of really good. Hell, Dungy at Syracuse kind of fits what they do, like, really well. Like, this is a super good quarterback league.
And that's the most important position in football. Like, that's the difference-making position.
It's the single reason that Louisville's, like, been able to make itself into something is, like, for a good 20 years, they've had some pretty good quarterbacks. They had the Brahms come through here and Chris Redman and Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, like, you've had good quarterbacks, and like, you can't ascend as a program if you don't have a good quarterback.
It's so key, man. Earlier you mentioned, I'll ask you if you got to save it for the show, tell us, do you have a prediction?
I am saving it. I am saving. Yeah. Cool. I got to save that one for the old run up, but we will have you on Saturday morning. So on 93.9 and 680, we go 9-12 for this one. You guys will enjoy this. So this is how big this is for us. I know this is just like a Saturday for you guys, but like, we're doing 24 hours of radio, like, the whole day, starting on Friday, going up to the game. So like, a bunch of different radio guys are just going to do this in shifts, and I'm doing 9-12 right up to kick off. So it's going to be pretty cool. And they're going to, I don't know if you guys heard this, they're going to bring game day inside the stadium from 11 to 12.
That's what Felica, the Bear, was saying on his Beyond the Bets podcast.
Yeah, and I've never heard of them doing that before, but that's going to be really cool. That's special for around here. I've never, you know, obviously game day has never been here before. I think it's going to be really fun, and I'm just really, really, really happy to not be in the Big 12.
Nice. If you want some trivia, Mark, Felica on his show said the only other times they've done that are, I think it was like the 2011 Texas-Oklahoma game, okay. Because that was also a nooner or whatever, and then they do it for like national championship type games.
Wow.
So that'd be pretty cool, man.
It's cool. I tell you what, I'm really happy, and Corey Clark's article just reminded me of this. Like, I'm happy that Louisville's kind of carrying its weight in the ACC. Like, I think it would could have been easy to come in and be Syracuse or be like Colorado or Rutgers, and just we're just happy to be here and not very good and don't really contribute a whole lot. And I'm just thrilled that it's worked out the way that it has, and that Louisville is sort of a productive and contributing member. And more than anything, I mean, it could have gone to hell real quick with Charlie leaving kind of abruptly right before the change of leagues. And Tom Jurich basically takes all the bullets, but this thing is working out for him. This thing's working out for him really well.
They care about winning, which is nice. Not to, like, there's some of these ACC teams that are just so wine and cheesy. It's nice to have another like football facing. Not that, I mean, Louisville's obviously great at basketball, but they care, which is kind of cool to have. You know, in the league, it's like a, you know, like Clemson and Miami essentially too. They care. Although Miami's kind of in a mess, but you mentioned Kentucky earlier.
Yeah.
Florida State fans do kind of follow Kentucky a little bit because of the Mark Stoops and DJ connection. Is he going to survive?
I mean, long term, no, he's not. I think that for folks who don't know, 2 years ago, they had a recruiting class like in the middle of the season that was going to be like top 15. And they were 5-3. And people were like, this is crazy how good this is. And basically, Mitch Barnhart rolled the dice and gave Mark Stoops a huge extension. At the time, the buyout was like $18 million. Right now, it's like 12. And since then, they lost out. And then last year, they were 5-1, and they lost out and didn't make a bowl either one. And then this lose the game to the coordinator that you fired at Southern Miss, then get housed at Florida. And they, like, they are damned if they do, damned if they don't with him, because they're on the hook for $12 million just to him. And then to get Eddie Grant and Henshaw to come from Cincinnati, they gave Grant a 3-year deal, and all the other assistants have 2-year deals.
That's a lot of guarantee.
Yeah, nobody does that. It's like $18 million in guarantees. And now they're not going to beat Alabama. They're not going to beat Tennessee. They're not going to beat Georgia. They're not going to beat Louisville. They're probably not going to beat Missouri, who put up like 600 something yards last week.
Is that at Missouri?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, so they're not. They may beat South Carolina because Big Dumb Will Muschamp's a terrible coach, but they're not going to make a bowl game.
Mark's also a Florida fan and grew up in Tampa, right? So he loves Will Muschamp.
So I mean, they're not going to make a bowl game, and then they're on the horns of, do we pay $18 million to buy out Stoops and all of these assistants? And like, here's for instance, so Stoops is doing the flailing, you know, coach on his way out thing where he's like, I'm going to be more active on this side of the ball that I'm good at. So the defensive side, I'm going to be more involved. Well, they just gave DJ Elliott a raise, $250,000 raise from a year ago. And now Stoops is having to take that side over, quote unquote. Like, it's a disaster, but they'd have to pay $18 million to buy him out. And then, you know, this is the SEC, man. You're not, they have to go pay a bunch of money. Either they're going to have to pay a bunch of money and get somebody who they think is good, or go on the cheap and get somebody from the MAC or, you know, some NFL guy that's sort of cutting ahead and wants to be a coach right now. Like, they're boned either way, and they're on the hook for all this money for the facilities upgrades they just did, which they badly needed. Like, they're screwed either way. They're two of their biggest commits from this class and their next class are going to be in Louisville for Florida State. So it's going, yeah. So, I mean, the vultures are kind of circling.
And they already lost that Russ Yeast kid.
And Louisville's probably going to get him. He's visiting.
He is really good, Mark. Yeah, like, I mean, really good. I watched him play against a very talented Texas team in 7-on. And, like, he was probably the only guy worth a damn on his team. And they were doubling him, and he was still beating those kids. And I think he could play play corner or receiver at the next level and play it well.
Well, Louisville wants him to play corner because they've got three receivers that they really, really like. They want him to be, like, a lockdown corner. You know, the crazy thing about that is, like, he is Craig Yeast's son that played at Kentucky under Hal Mumming.
Yes.
And Louisville's basically going to poach him from Kentucky.
Yeah, that's kinda how bad it's going for Mark Stoops. That's not a great thing for them at all. Hey, how pissed off do you think Vanderbilt fans would be if James Franklin left Penn State and ended up at Kentucky?
Oh, boy, that would be interesting. And, you know, I think that James Franklin is maybe one of the biggest reasons Kentucky fans have kind of changed to where they're like, I think they used to be able to pacify themselves. Like, it's really hard to win and beat us. I mean, it's hard. Like, we're never going to be able to catch up to anybody. Us and Vandy, we're stuck in. Well, then James Franklin wins like 9 games 3 years in a row. And it, like, it can be done. You just have to not be bad at coaching. And I think that James Franklin and, like, just the medium success he had at Vandy is the number one reason Kentucky fans are like, screw this, I'm tired of paying money for all this and not being good. If Vandy can do it, we can find somebody that can do it too. But they haven't been able to.
Man, that's...
It's ugly, dude. It's
Hey, Mark Stoops going to get paid, though. He's going to be rich as hell.
They completed 6 passes against Florida.
3 to 4 to, right?
Well, there was a time, like, midway through the third quarter where Florida had intercepted them 3 times and they had completed 2 passes.
I did a quarterback club speech the other night, and a guy told me a joke. And no, it was a pretty good group, and but it's not an FSU club. It's mixed. And he told me, he said, you realize the Atlantic Ocean is going to beat Florida before Kentucky does, right?
That's really good.
Yeah, I was like, oh, my God, an actual good quarterback club joke that I can repeat. That's
yeah, no kidding, right?
Yeah, that's pretty solid there.
That is a good joke.
Yeah.
1986, the last time they beat Florida.
I was one. Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. Hey, do you think there's something to the idea that you – I know we're talking a lot about Kentucky on an FSU podcast, but if anybody listening this deep has really enjoyed it, and they're probably still listening. Do you think there's something to the idea that if you're at Kentucky – you really need to not be bad early in the season. Like, if you start sucking once basketball season comes, it's a lot more okay.
Oh, listen, there are. Look, I think Louisville fan base kind of struggles with this. They struggle to stay paying attention once basketball season gets here until the bowl. Like, that last 4 regular season games, like, there's kind of a lag. Like, it's true. And for Kentucky, it's like, not only is there kind of a lag, but it's like a bailout. Like, thank God we can root for basketball. Like, with Louisville, it's like it's just hard to pay attention to both. But with Kentucky, they're like, get us out of here. But and I think that's really been the struggle the last couple of years, is they've had good starts when they were the only thing in town, and then basketball starts, and they start to suck, like, overnight. And the fans are just, like, out. They don't care.
Makes sense.
Which is fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man, we did 1:06. Mark, This was awesome. This was really good, dude.
I enjoyed it anytime.
All right, dude. Enjoyed it.
All right, y'all. Talk to you later.
All right. Take care, Mark. Right.
Thanks, Mark.
Ingram, in addition to Louisiana Hot Sauce, we are also brought to you by our friends at Madison Social. Matt and his crew do such a great job over there. The best place for food and drink in Tallahassee, right in the heart of college town, shadow of Duke Campbell Stadium, as you've heard us say for 2 years, because they've been supporting us for 2 years, got in on the ground floor. We love their product. They love us. It's a great partnership, and it's a great place to eat and drink, especially a great place to watch the Noles game. You can get in there. You can get one of your Noon Game Suck t-shirts, which is pretty sweet that they got, and believe they're going to be opening at 10 this Saturday for yet another Noon game. Get in there early. Get yourself one of those Nolecast Bloody Marys, which is a house Bloody Mary with Louisiana hot sauce, because we got that sponsor synergy going on, with a nice big slider on there. Really cool. Maybe grab yourself a commemorative cup. But I also got something cool to tell you about this week from Madison Social and the folks at Proof Brewing, who they do a lot of partnership with. It's the Florida Tap Invitational. Ingram, you like craft beer?
I do.
I do as well. Not quite as much as some folks, but I definitely like having a couple of them.
That is exactly how I would describe myself, bud. I enjoy craft beer. I don't know that I'm particularly, like, over just – obnoxiously overzealous to drink it. I'll put it that way.
My neighbor has, I don't know, a bunch of growlers and brews his own constantly, and I'm not quite to that level, and I can't drink like 10 IPAs back-to-back like you maybe could Miller Lite or something. But if you are a craft brew fan, or if you want to kind of get a chance to try out a bunch of different craft brews, I got a really cool opportunity for you. Friday night, it's the Florida Tap Invitational. Madison Social, Proof Brewing, a bunch of other great breweries from all around the state. Check this out. Three Daughters, Seventh Son, 81 Bay, Aardwolf, Angry Chair, Barley Mow, Bold City, Brew Bus, Central 28, Cigar City, Cigar City Cider and Mead, Civil Society, Copper Tail, Crooked Can, Cycle. By the way, that's down in Tampa. That's really good. Darwin Brewing, and that's just the A through D's. I'm not going to read the entire list on this podcast. Rain or Shine, Friday night, 7 p.m., your festival ticket gets you access to a local food and beer pairing right on Madison Street. Some of Tallahassee's newest restaurants are over there. Obviously, Madison Social is a great spot. We highly recommend that. And then the fun continues Saturday at 4. So after the ball game's over, you can continue to drink craft beers, which is pretty awesome, at the Tap Invitational. Your festival ticket gives you unlimited sampling
Ooh, from breweries. That can be dangerous.
Very dangerous. But also, I like it because, man, there's so many different craft beers out there, and I don't always want to be like, yeah, I want to try that. Sometimes I just feel like I wuss out and stick with the one I know, you know, because I don't want to order a whole one and be like, I actually don't like this. Unlimited sampling is pretty cool because you can really try a lot of different beers, figure out what kind of six-pack you're going to get later in the week. Tickets $35 for general admission, $50 for VIP, which is a 3 p.m. entry and complimentary food. Pretty sweet. If you want to check it out, go to fltapinvitational.com. That's fltapinvitational.com. Brought to you by the fine folks there with Madison Social Proof Brewing and a bunch of other great breweries from around the state. Help support your local craft brewery scene and visit Madison Social. Ingram, that was really great to have Mark join us on the Louisiana Hot Sauce line. Again, if you guys want to listen to Mark the rest of this week, that's 680 or 93.9 The Ville in Louisville. It's ESPN Radio. Does a great job. I'll be joining him on his pregame show as well after you listen to the Nolecast if you want to catch me on there on Saturday. This is going to be a really exciting matchup. I'm pumped about this. This is a game that I know you and I have hyped a lot throughout the offseason, even when fans were telling us that it wasn't going to be quite as good as we thought, but we stuck to our guns, and now we get to see it. Mark asked us two questions. What questions do you have about Florida State leading into this game?
The first question that I have is what the secondary is, not so much how they're going to replace Derwin, not too much. One, it's not possible. Two, I think we have an idea as to what they're going to do. I'm more interested in if the secondary is going to eliminate just blown coverages and just zero coverage far too frequently, particularly against a offense and a staff that scheme for that as good as anybody in college football. So first couple of series, always watch the line of scrimmage, but I'll particularly be looking to what we do in the back end of the secondary and if Florida State looks like it has a firm grasp as to what it's doing.
I'm totally with you right there. I think Nate Andrews is healthy and is going to potentially play a lot. I think it's going to be him and Westbrook in some combination in the back end. That's at least what my sources, I believe, is going to happen there. Granted, we still have Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday practice, from which I don't have word yet, so things can change. But as of the first 2 days of practice this week, that's what I was told is likely going to happen. And I think, look, for as much as I don't think Andrews is a great player, and I'm not going to pretend that I think he's some all-world player, he does do two things. Number one, he knows the defense, right? And I think if you tell him, get the defense lined up, get the calls correct, and don't let people beat you deep, even if that means you're going to give up some stuff underneath you, I think I'm okay with that. Because Jackson, kind of similar to Francois here, except probably a more extreme version, may not always be the most accurate guy with touch underneath, right? He has a cannon. What do you do when you face a guy like that? You try to make him be patient and consistent underneath. I think that you can get that done with Andrews or with Westbrook. Now, are you going to make as many plays? Are you going to break on as many balls? No, because Andrews is not a great athlete. But I think it's possible that in terms of deep coverage and alignment, that the drop-off from Derwin James is merely significant as opposed to just enormous, which I think it is in other areas, like run stopping, huge. Tracking down Lamar Jackson, huge drop-off. There's no way to hide it. I mean, Derwin is just that damn good.
But with the exception of that, what stands out to you and what will you be watching for, particularly in the first 5 minutes or so, if there's any kind of early tell that you think Florida State's particularly well situated to win the game?
Ingram, I'm definitely concerned about the guard spots. That Kareem R took second team snaps the first 2 days of the week is very concerning to me. Now, I don't know if that's because they were just easing him back in, you know, It potentially could be. Who knows? He's coming back from a concussion. Jimbo Fisher initially seemed really optimistic. Then he didn't seem quite as optimistic. But yesterday he said that he practiced. And if he's ready to go, I think that's an upgrade over Derek Kelly, assuming he's healthy and not too rusty. I mean, he hasn't played in the game yet this year due to the concussion symptoms. So he's been out about 3 weeks. The other guard spot, I don't know that there's an enormous difference between Wilson Bell and Landon Dickerson, but you're talking about a 17-year-old kid in Dickerson playing his first ever road game, and I do think that you want to limit the amount of inexperience as much as possible in this ballgame, especially in a tough road environment. So I'm going to be watching to see how the guard spots hold up on the interior. And then on the other side, I'm really going to be anxious to see how much Florida State can control the line of scrimmage against Louisville's offensive line, which I believe is improved. I think Mark's accurate there when he says it's improved. I think Florida State's defensive line is also improved. You know, last year, Florida State won the battle up front. If they can do that again and they can make Lamar Jackson, if they can compress the pocket when he goes to throw, and they can make him run wider, right, when he goes to run on some of these design runs, The key is to make him run very wide as opposed to letting him cut it up the field earlier, because then that gives your guys a little bit extra time to hawk him down. If Josh Sweat and DeMarcus Walker are able to control the line of scrimmage on the edges and control the edges, I think that's going to be a big key for Florida State, and I think that's something we're going to be able to see fairly early in this ballgame. You cannot get upfield and past Lamar Jackson, right? If you get past him, you're never going to turn around and catch him. You've got to stay in front of him. Bill Belichick famously says in one of those clinics that he had, you know, behind the quarterback is the worst place to be. That's especially true when you have a guy who I've seen some people say is the most athletic, you know, elite type quarterback since Michael Vick. That's probably true. I mean, you watch him; he just dusts guys. Like, it looks like he's not even going fast, and yet he's. I'm just trying to think of a quarterback Florida State has faced in recent years with his athleticism level, and I don't know that I can think of one. You've got to have a controlled rush, and you have got to win the line of scrimmage your defensive line, especially with Derwin out.
I'll just go and name one more of mine. You mentioned the guards. I don't want to make too big of a deal of it, but right tackle has been pretty damn shaky, and I think you'll know that early on as to what it really looks like for Florida State. And Leonard's obviously a project and a guy that's raw, but a guy that's going to have to significantly step his game up if he wants to finish the year as a starter at right tackle. Obviously, the TCU transfer, the Devonta Fields, is a name that most people are going to be familiar with. If you listen to Mark mention James Hearns as well, it sounds like regardless of who he's matched up against, Leonard will be against a player that's, you know, I don't know if necessarily be as talented as everybody saw against Ole Miss, but a really, really formidable challenge. Fields is as good as any end that he'll see. And former Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year is, in my opinion, going to be something to watch and going to be an area perhaps where Florida State could get embarrassed.
So I agree with that, and I think that you have got to help him out a lot, and you have to ask Rod to play well in one-on-one situations against either Fields or Hearns. You know, if they're going to put Fields over top of Leonard, then you got to just help him out with the tight end, right? And you got to run a lot of play action at him. You got to make him hesitant to just rush up the field all the time. You got to run the football underneath him at times if he is going to run up the field like that. And I think that the solution to Leonard is most likely to have Rod play well without a bunch of help. I also think here, and this is key, if Freddie Stevenson's out and you end up having to play a lot of your pony package with Dalvin and with Jacquez Patrick, both of whom can catch the football, I think you have got to stress Louisville's safeties and Louisville's linebackers in pass coverage, especially those two outside guys. You know, if they're going to keep Hearns and Fields in the ballgame, see how well those guys cover Derwin James and Jacquez Patrick, right? Make those guys play a little more passive. Make them play some pass coverage. Don't allow them just to run up the field all the time. Francois has done a pretty good job of checking the football down so far in his career and seems to throw a pretty catchable ball when he's throwing the ball underneath to the guys in the flats. That's got to continue. I also think that, like I said, the play action is going to be really, really big. You know, Louisville's going to be just ganging up to stop Dalvin Cook after what he's done to him or done to them 2 years ago or 2 years in a row. You absolutely have to hit these guys with play action early and often. And if you do it and you establish running the football, then you can start to work some more play action. You can get those guys back on their heels a little bit. And I don't think Louisville's defense wants to play passive. I think they want to be an attacking defense. They're never a defense that's all that disciplined. That play action game can really help them get off their kind of their keys and get off of what they want to do. And then finally, I think this is a game that you are gonna run DeAndre Francois. And I think you're going to run him a lot. We've seen Fisher in games where he's worried about stuff or potentially where they might be outmanned a little bit, given some injuries, really lean on that quarterback run game. We saw that in 2008 with Christian Ponder down in Joe Robbie, what is now the new Miami Stadium against the Hurricanes, when Christian Ponder ran for all those yards. We've seen it at times. We saw it with E.J. Manuel when he had to come in to the bowl game against South Carolina. I think they're going to run DeAndre Francois more in this ballgame because I think it's going to stress Louisville's defense a lot, particularly in the first half when they're not going to have one of their starting safeties.
You comfortable moving into the prediction part of the podcast?
Yeah, I think we can go predictions.
I'll go ahead and lead off. This is not something that we've talked to each other about. I, in my mind, have somewhere around a 37-31 victory for Florida State on Saturday.
I have more of a... I think a 30-27. I think both teams are going to do better than they have at not allowing the big play. I think that's going to be a big time focus of denying the big play. I think that's going to get them see which teams execute in the red zone, which requires good anticipation when you throw the ball, requires the ability to run the football. And I think that Florida State's size and length in the red zone, holding Louisville to some field goals, not allowing quite as many big plays. If Florida State wins, which I'm going to pick them to do. I'm not super confident in this, but I think Florida State is the better team. I assume Dalvin Cook's going to run the ball well. I'm going to go 30-27. What percentage would you want to slap on there as far as how likely?
Yeah, but good question. I think I would have this, not to be too detailed, but somewhere between 58 and 60%.
All right, I'm going to go, I think, a little more, 55%, which is obviously really nerdy. That's fine. If we were doing this on Thursday evening or Friday, I'd probably have a little bit more specific pick. But I do think that there's some specific injuries in this game that are going to matter. You know, are you going to have either of your starting guards? Are you going to have Freddie Stevenson, who has played really well in the only game he played this year, which was Ole Miss? Exactly who is going to fill in for Derwin James? Will it be Nate the whole time or Westbrook the whole time, or will it be more of a mix? Those are key questions that we're going to have to keep monitoring throughout the week. But as of right now, we're recording this on Wednesday evening. I think that 30-27 makes some sense. Florida State's length and athleticism wins out in the red zone, and Florida State comes away with a hard-fought road victory.